Hello, everyone, and welcome to another America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Denzel. It's Wednesday. You know what today is? I think today starts the NHL playoffs, the hockey playoffs. And I have to tell you, I'm not too excited about that one way or the other. I just look at hockey as being soccer on ice. Although I will admit that if the Pittsburgh Penguins make it to the Stanley Cup Finals, that I will make an attempt to watch the games just because the games finally mean something. But when I watch hockey, it just feels like there is no strategy to it. It just feels like so much luck. The puck is just bouncing around everywhere. No tactics, no strategy, no plan. The power plays all look the same. The defenses all look the same. And I realize that there are great hockey players and not so great hockey players. I realize there's Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin and guys that have retired, Mario Lemieux, Wayne Gretzky, all of them, Gordie Howe. But I got to tell you, when I'm watching it, a hockey game, whenever, just if I happen upon one, I can't tell the good players from the bad players. They all look to be skating about the same speed. They all shoot about the same way. Now, I know eventually some of them distinguish themselves. Like, Sidney Crosby had the most goals in the NHL this year. Obviously, he did something right. But on a game-by-game, just taking game-by-game basis, it's hard to tell who the great players are and who the not-so-great players are. Whereas when you watch, like, an NFL game, if the Steelers are, with Ben Roethlisberger, are playing the Browns, it's very easy for me to tell that Ben Roethlisberger is a much better quarterback than the Browns quarterback. And if the Patriots are playing, let's say, the Jaguars, it's very easy for me to say that Tom Brady is better than any quarterback the Jaguars have ever had. It's very easy to tell. In hockey, it just seems like, it seems like luck sometimes to me that certain people score, and I can't respect something like that. It's the same thing, I think, when I watch soccer. I can't look at, and I've watched plenty of soccer matches. I've watched plenty of hockey games, too. After all these years, I still can't tell the good players from the great players from just the good players. They all look about the same. And when I see that, I just think, oh, well, maybe this game is just a lot about luck. The ball bounces the right particular way. The hockey puck, you know, that disc just flip-flopping around all over the ice. And sometimes it goes in, sometimes it doesn't. I just haven't convinced myself after all these years that the game takes as much skill as everybody. Now, I know the guys are skating, but they're all skating. So, I don't know, there's just something about it. There's just something about it that I've watched it all these years when I have, and I just say, I just don't know what I'm watching. It just doesn't seem like there's much strategy and everything, which I usually associate with sports, whether it has to do with golf or tennis or football or baseball. Every at-bat looks a little different, and the defense is a little different. The shift and all these things, you can tell from one batter to the next. It's hard to tell talent differences in hockey just by watching one game, which makes it weird to me, I think. So let's get to the show. There was an election in Kansas last night. The reason this happened was because Mike Pompeo was selected by Donald Trump to head up the CIA, and he had been in the House of Representatives. So his seat needed filled. And this was an election between Ron Estes and James Thompson. Ron Estes being the Republican, James Thompson being the Democrat. Although looking at some of James Thompson's ads, you'd never know it. But Democrats were making this out to be kind of a telltale sign of how well the Donald Trump administration is going so far a couple months in. And they thought that they might be, you know, if they could win it, they might show that, you know, that, that Donald Trump isn't doing the great job that he thinks he's doing. Of course, I don't think he's doing a great job, but other people think he's doing, and they to show that he's just a flash in the pan, and that his presidency shouldn't be taken seriously. And if the Democrats could win this seat, then maybe they'd be able to convince some other Republicans, hey, if you see what just happened here, you don't want that happen in a couple years. You should start going along with us. Well, the Republican Ron Estes did end up winning, but it should be known that he didn't win by that much. I think he won by about 6 points. I think it was 52.0 percentage points to 46.2, 46.3. So not quite 6 percentage points. Whereas just back in November, Donald Trump won this particular House district by 27 points. And Mike Pompeo, running for re-election, I guess he didn't know at the time that he was going to get picked to be on the CIA. But back in November, when he ran for re-election and won, he won that district by 31 points. So we went from 31 points for Mike Pompeo to 6 points from Ron Estes. And Donald Trump, once again, ran a little bit behind Mike Pompeo in that district back in November, ran behind him by 4 points. Beating Hillary by 27 points. What does this mean? I guess Democrats are going to say, see, that even though they didn't win it, they can still say, see, we cut this margin down. Remember, Democrats generally don't do well in midterm elections. The only midterm election I would say that they've done well in the last 20 years is probably in 2006. Every other midterm election, I think, at the best has been a wash for Democrats, and usually they've gotten their butts kicked. But you could call this a midterm election, being that the president wasn't on the ballot. This was actually a special election to fill a seat that was vacant. But it's kind of a midterm election. It's one, traditionally, that Democrats don't do very well. So I have to tell you, I think that they have to take something. I don't know how, in the end, how much it means, but it definitely means something. That they can keep it close in a district that just a few months ago was won by a Republican by 31 points. Obviously, they got some people to turn out. The Republicans didn't. And still, it's a district that, I don't know how long it's been going Republican, but being that the Republican beforehand won by 31 points, I'm going to say that this has been in Republican hands for a long time, although I know that redistricting occurs once in a while, so it's hard to say. But if Donald Trump won this district by 27 points, I think you'd probably have to go back quite a ways to find a time that people in this area voted for a Democrat. Maybe you could go back to the Bill Clinton years. Before that, you might have to go way, 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 way back. So I'm guessing that this 6% margin is probably the closest that the Democrats have come to winning this House seat, or a president winning this county or whatever it is, in quite a while. And so the Democrats should be happy about that. Maybe they can take something from it. I don't know. And I, like I said, I think it helps that if you watch some of these ads that James Thompson did, that he doesn't come right out and call himself a Democrat. Maybe that helped him as well. He marketed himself as, of course, he couldn't call himself a Republican. That would just be a complete mislabel. But just kept, I think, the party identification out of it. And I think that that probably helped him. But the Republicans still hold on to this seat, and we'll just have to see if any of other circumstances like this happen. Maybe some, I'm not saying I want it to happen, but maybe a Republican will die in office and there'll have to be another special election, or one of them will retire midway, has health problems. Maybe one of them will get appointed to something and have to give up their seat, maybe something in the executive branch in the next 2 years, and then we'll take another look at this if another special election happens to see what the results are. But there is something I guess the Democrats can be happy about, although I'm sure they wish they would have won it. That would have been a real coup for them. And for the Republicans, as I continue to tell you, I think that too many Republicans have taken the wrong message from this past election, from this presidential election. I continue to believe that. That I think they've convinced themselves that this is the way to win, to have somebody like Donald Trump, simply because he won in a few states that Republicans hadn't won in quite a long time. Can't hold that against Donald Trump. You know that I believe he won this election fair and square. As fair and square as you're going to get in a country of over 300 million people. It's as fair as it's going to get. I believe that. Although I'm not going to tell you that every vote was legitimate. But this, I think, on the Republican side, only winning by 6 percentage points, should give at least a couple people some pause. Now, is anybody outside of Kansas paying attention to this election? Probably not. Maybe you wouldn't even know about it if I hadn't brought it up. I'm guessing that Fox News and other places followed this election yesterday as it was happening, as people were showing up. I don't know what turnout is. I'm guessing it was very low. But if turnout was very low, I think what it said on the Republican side, I think what it says is that the coattails and the energy that Donald Trump allegedly brought to the election in November of last year hasn't carried too far. Yes, people still support him. I told you about the conversation yesterday. I told you about the conversation I had with my mother this past weekend about how she believes Donald Trump's doing a lot of great things. Of course, I disagreed with that. So there's belief out there, I think, among many Republicans that Donald Trump is doing a fine job. But that energy, that get up and go that people had for him and beating Hillary Clinton, I would say these months later, has diminished. However, I would say that if it were just in an alternate universe, if Hillary Clinton had been running against Ron Estes for this seat in Kansas, I believe that he would have won by a much greater margin. And that's why I continue to say that Republicans shouldn't get too excited about Donald Trump winning in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, because he was running against the worst Democrat candidate probably in the history of that party. Probably. I'm not saying necessarily the worst person. I can't say that. But a candidate who had so much baggage, had so much bad history, was kind of unlikable. And that Donald Trump couldn't win the popular vote should still tell something to people, but I don't know if they're going to learn it. I don't know. It just doesn't seem the energy has continued since the election, and I think that's what Republicans have to keep in mind, especially in this district, where just 4 months ago, 5 months ago, Mike Pompeo won the district by 31 points. 31. And then Ron Estes only won by 6. Let's move on to something else. There was this attack on a soccer team in Germany. I'm going to do my best to pronounce this. I've never heard this word, this name spoken, so I apologize. Borussia, or is it Borussia? B-O-R-U-S-S. It's Russia with a B-O at the beginning. Borussia Dortmund. D-O-R-T-M-U-N-D. Borussia Dortmund is the name of a team in Germany, in the prominent soccer league in Germany. And they were going to play a match against Monaco, and their bus was attacked, and we now know that it was an attack by at least one guy who had connections to Islamic terror. The guy was Muslim, and he had connections to terrorists. I don't know if it was ISIS specifically, but the police have caught this guy. And there was one player that was injured. He's going to live. I think some shrapnel caught him in the wrist, and he's had surgery. He's going to live. And although I did read that the explosion, one of the shrapnel pieces embedded itself in the headrest of one of the seats on this bus. Luckily, obviously, it didn't hit anybody, but I'm going to imagine if somebody's head had been there near that headrest, that person would have been killed. So this could have been a very lethal attack. I think this team, everybody's very fortunate that only one person was injured. It says that the bomb was hidden in some bushes or shrubbery along the side of the road, and it was set off as the bus passed. And the bus was not like a school bus. It was one of those, you know, luxury big buses you normally see, even like American sports teams ride in when they're going to the stadiums. This is interesting to me, and this is something that I haven't brought up for a long time. There's actually two points that I want to make about this, and it's maybe to understand these terrorists better. I happen to believe that the terrorists want to eventually kill somebody who is famous. And I don't necessarily mean the president of the United States. I don't mean the leader of Germany or anything. I think that they would like to get their hands on somebody famous. And it would be horrible. Anybody that's killed by a terrorist, it's all horrible. Horrible. Just the worst that the earth has to offer. But I'm going to guess right now there are schemes being hatched to figure out how to get their hands on a famous musician, a famous actor or actress, somebody like that. They would not limit themselves to politicians or military people. And we already know that in the past, especially in the beginning days of ISIS, when those decapitation videos were coming out, that they don't mind getting their hands on regular people and killing them. You know, it doesn't have to be anybody in particular. But the way I think I understand ISIS and other terrorist groups is they are what you would say excellent marketers. I think they know how to recruit people into their ranks, and they've done it successfully all over the world, from the Middle East into Europe, over into Asia, and the whole way to the United States. They have a way of attracting people to their cause. And what better way to do that would be to show that they can get their hands on somebody who has security around this person all the time, and to kill the person, or even probably better in their eyes, get their hands on somebody who's famous and be able to do a video with this person like they did a few years ago, they would view that as a huge coup. And I hope that famous people, whether it's some band on tour or an actor and actress doing a tour to promote a movie or whatever is going on, I hope that they all know this, and I hope that they are I know that they have bodyguards and everything else, but this might have to go to a level above that to make sure that these kinds of people are safe, because I believe that ISIS and other terrorist groups have those ideas in mind. Now, having said that, and this goes, so this is the first idea that comes to my mind, and given that this was a soccer team that was attacked, I know a little bit about soccer. I know Lionel Messi. I know Ronaldo, who from Spain or Portugal. I've seen pictures of him. Some of these well-known soccer players, they, I guess, would fall into the category that I just talked about. A person, man or woman, who is internationally famous. Lionel Messi is one of the, even though in the United States, he probably could walk down the street and nobody would know who he is. Elsewhere in the world, he's like the best. He's like the Michael Jordan of soccer. He would be known anywhere else. They'd probably love to get their hands on him, you know, and make an example of him because they think that it would be good for recruiting. On the other hand, there is the idea out there, and I agree with it, that I wonder if the world takes terrorism seriously enough. I would say the answer is no. Would I see so many countries taking in refugees, what we know is going on in Sweden with the recent attack, and now their leader is saying they're not taking in any more immigrants or any more refugees or whatever. We'll see if that sticks, whatever. And in England, and the reason, one of the reasons that England left the EU was because of having to go along with all of those immigration policies. We'll see if England changes their policies. We'll see. I don't think Europe is going to do that. But all of this, you know, trying to understand these people and trying to get along with them instead of knowing that they just want to kill us, they're just bad people, they hate us just because we exist. The reason they hate us is because we breathe, not for any other reason. But I don't know how many people, especially we know, I don't know, I'm not going to say half the population in the United States, but I'm going to say 35% to 40% of the people in the United States think that terrorism is caused by the United States because of our meddling in the Middle East, allegedly. There are the Ron Paul people who think that. There are the isolationist type people who think that. There are many Democrats who think that, many liberals, and that's what's taught on most schools, universities, colleges across the United States. And so the blame is put on the United States for this. So there are many millions and millions and millions and millions of people who don't take the terrorist threat, even after 9/11, everything since, seriously enough. But this goes to a point that I've tried to make about many topics, not just terrorism, is that you start getting in the way, if terrorists start getting in the way of people's hobbies, of people's pastimes, of people's entertainment, then even those hardcore people who believe that the United States is to blame for terrorists in the world because we can't keep our nose out of everything, even they would start to change and say, we got to do something about this terrorist stuff. Even though it would be for the shallowest of shallowest of shallowest reasons in the world, just because we need to take care of something because it gets in the way of our entertainment. I guess specifically to what happened here with this soccer team being attacked. What happens if terrorism gets bad enough that soccer teams are afraid to meet up and play a match and nobody gets to watch it on TV, nobody gets to go to the games, nobody gets to go to a bar and watch it on TV and get drunk with their friends? For too many people, I think that is their attitude. It's that, yes, terrorism is bad and who knows to blame for it, but there's nothing I can do about it. I just want to block it out of my life. I just want to have a good time. Yes, I know people are getting killed, but oh well. Unfortunately, I think too many people have that attitude. In fact, I will tell you, I started writing a novel several years ago. Many, many years ago that I didn't finish. But one of the points made early, and it's I guess I can give this idea out. It's not technically original, but there were some original elements in it. It was about an attack on the United States by the rest of the world and how Americans really didn't believe that it was going to happen until they figured out that the NFL season wasn't going to happen. Because if it wasn't going to happen because of a referee strike or a player strike, the NFL season was suspended because there was an attack on the United States. Even though there were all these signs there that it was going to happen and some Americans had already been killed and there were warships lining up in international waters not far off, people were just going about their lives thinking, well, hey, as long as the NFL's, my game plays on Sunday, that's all I care about. As long as I get to go to the movies, that's all I care about. You know, as long as I get to go hunting, that's all I care about. Not realizing that there is something bigger than that in life. That some people, they aren't going to believe in something that is dangerous until it inconveniences that person personally. and gets in the way of something that they like. So there's no idea about the world should be a safer place. There's no idea about how these people are bad and something needs to be done about them. No, it's as long as I get my football, anything else in the world can happen. I don't care. And I'm here to tell you on this podcast, I believe a lot of people think that way. I am convinced, and I have to tell you, I think that this has even been proven more to me by my doing the other program, Unfound, about missing persons. It's obvious to me, and I hate this. I hate this about human nature. But it's obvious to me that a lot of people don't give a dang about different disappearances until it happens to them personally. In addition, there's a lot of people who just see these cases, murders, disappearances, and everything as a means to an end so they can make money. Never thinking that there's a bigger idea here than just using all of this stuff to make money. Unfortunately, with terrorism, I think it's very much the same way for too many people. It's like, oh, did that terrorist have to happen today? I mean, really, now it's going to be, I really wanted to go to that Borussia Dortmund match against Monaco. Did these terrorists really have to do that? Couldn't they have done it tomorrow? I mean, I was really looking forward to this match. So, that's what I think of when I think about this attack. That I think that for people to finally wake up how bad this all is, and that we can't try to understand these people and try to rationalize with these people and let them get away with murder, whether it's figuratively or literally. Because you do find out very quickly that these radical Muslims, they know how to play the blame card very well. They know how to play the victim card very well. They think that they're the ones who are being discriminated against. Meanwhile, they're getting away with murder. There's many Muslims who won't come out and speak out against the more violent sides of their religion. They keep their mouth shut, which is a complaint I've had since September 11th. They know who the violent, people who have violent tendencies or violent thoughts or said, weird things, made violent statements, made dangerous statements amongst them, and they don't tell anybody. Many stories out there like that. And they just want to go about their business. And there's, I think, a lot of people who aren't Muslim who are the same way. Who look at the Orlando attack and say, yeah, that's bad. Well, at least didn't get in the way of fun I had tonight. Yeah, the San Bernardino attack. Yeah, that's bad. But at least it didn't happen to my Christmas party because I ended up winning $100, getting $100 in a scratch game card that I got as an anonymous gift in a gift exchange. That's where I think we are. As not just Americans, but people all over the world. And the problem with that attitude is that attitude allows things to creep in to the point where it can't be fixed. And about the time that you discover that your entertainment, your hobby, your leisure time is going to be interrupted by a terrorist or a true-out attack, a military attack, it's too late to fix it. It's too late to say, whoa, 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 what are you doing? Whoa, what? But I thought that you were. No, it's too late. It's too late. It's too late in maybe the example would be like the marathon bombing where all you want to do, the runners in that race or might have been setting personal records and they get upset at the terrorist attack simply because it ruined a record that they were going to set. Just completely forgetting that a couple people got killed and people lost legs and everything else. It's a very common knee-jerk reaction that people have to things like this. And I think that's it's one of the reasons that, you know, we're still fighting terrorism all these years later. But I got to go to the break. All right. I got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism. WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we are back at America's Conservative Podcast. Let's move on to something else. We just talked about the soccer team attack. I'm just glad that nobody was killed and everybody who had injuries will recover from them. I think that that one particular team member who was hit in the wrist, I think that he'll be able to go back to playing soccer fairly quickly. I was reading this article about Bill O'Reilly. There is the he's going on vacation. I don't. Of course, he's saying that he had it planned. Of course, the rumor out there is that he's going on this vacation because of all of these allegations that have been brought against him, and they aren't just they're just not allegations, but they're real cases where there have been charges filed against him for sexual harassment, and women have gotten money. And we talked about it last week. At least five cases totaling about $13 million. And I was reading something, and this is horrible. This is why, you know, there's just something wrong with our side. I know that I'm not supposed to talk about that. I know that it's almost too fashionable these days to bash my fellow conservatives, but I do that. And I was very hard on them for getting behind Donald Trump and those the ones I know that voted for him, and I continue to do that. But when I know that there are the reports out there, and they're all over the place, about Bill O'Reilly and these cases that have been brought against him by multiple women, and I read that his ratings have actually gone up, you know, since this stuff came out. It's a little disgusting. It's a little disgusting. And maybe we now, on our side, can understand why, you know, going back, I guess, and this is too easy to do, going back to the Bill Clinton years when those allegations were against him, it didn't seem to hurt his popularity. And Republicans sat around and said, why isn't this the case? We had Jennifer Flowers. We had this woman. We had that woman. And probably a couple of these cases, he probably raped them or sexually assaulted them. Or, you know, it wasn't just a, you know, cheating on Hillary. And it was way more than that. Why is it that these people can't get the message that this guy is bad? How is it that he won in 1992? How is it that he won in 1996 over a war hero like Bob Dole? How is it that his favorable numbers seem to stay so high and everybody still likes him? Well, I guess we know, because I guess they're going to be Republicans who do the same thing, because that's the only those are the only people that watch Bill O'Reilly. Those are the only people that watch Fox News. So the numbers for his show go up after these allegations. And they're, once again, they're not allegations. These women come forward and the people find out that money has been paid off to these women. People even watch more. It is a crazy, crazy thing about human nature. I'm not saying that this happens all the time where a famous person gets negative publicity, publicity that is truly bad. It's not, and it's way worse than just a cheating on a wife or something like that. That you find out that they were drinking and driving, you know. And in some cases, I guess people have paid for it. Maybe like Mel Gibson in what he did. He has certainly paid for it in Hollywood for quite a few years. And I'm glad to see that he's back in everybody's good graces now. But there are way too many cases on the other side, like Bill Clinton, like Bill O'Reilly, who it seems their infamousness even makes them more popular. I've told you what I think about Bill O'Reilly. I don't think he's a good guy at all. It wouldn't surprise me at all to know that he sexually harassed women and made, you know, motions toward them and said things to them. If they wanted to get, you know, on the show, or if they wanted to do this, they were going to have to do this with them. Just like all of the allegations about Roger Ailes. I doubt, let's put it this way on top of it. I doubt that Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly were doing these things independently. Like, they didn't know what the other one was doing. Instead, I tend to think that they knew each other were doing this, and they probably talked about it, which is disgusting and wrong and immoral and unethical and illegal. And they got away with it, it seems, for many years. And I'm glad they're not getting away with it anymore. I have to tell you, as a guy, as a man, as a straight man who is certainly attracted to beautiful women, and anybody that knows me, if I can't date a woman who is hot, and maybe I'm just shallow, if I can't date and go out and be seen with attractive women, then I just stay single, and I think that's probably why I've been single for so many years. If that can't happen, then I'm just fine being by myself. But I can assure you that as a straight guy, I can't relate to any of this behavior at all. Now, I will admit that I've been in some work situations, very close women who became friends of mine, who we certainly had the back and forth of saying things that were funny and maybe R-rated, somewhat X-rated. Maybe that happens in... That happens in a lot of, I think, work environments out there. And I know that violent feminists don't like it, but I think your average person doesn't mind it at all. Just have to pick your situations. Now, granted, I worked in entertainment where that kind of stuff is just, even though Hollywood would never admit this, it's just kind of accepted. It just is. You have a bunch of good-looking people being around people who... Women are dancers, men who are actors and models and everything else, and this stuff is going to happen. It just is. It just is. But in a situation where Bill O'Reilly is boss, and he, you know, is the most famous person, has the best watched show on Fox News, and he's doing this to women who are... you know, under him, and I say that figuratively, not literally, but in a position where they may have to listen to him, and this is what he did, it's disgusting. And this is part of the, and I know a lot of men do this, this is something that I can tell you I can't relate to. I cannot relate to this at all. That I can tell you that in the work situations that I've had in my life, in working with women, I always, although I'm not the easiest guy to get along with, I admit it, but I always valued women's opinions, love working with women on projects, worked with them on movies, and all sorts of office, you know, situations, everything else. And I think that I cannot imagine saying something to any of these women like anything like this. I can't imagine it. Even though, like I said, there were other situations in my life where women that I worked with every day and you get to know each other after a while and those things, you know, those kinds of situations start to happen. And they're funny more than anything else. Rarely is anything ever serious. It's just talk. Maybe this happened in a couple of Roger Ailes' cases, and maybe even a couple of Bill O'Reilly's cases, and a couple of these women saw a situation to take advantage of. Maybe they needed a new pair of shoes, and they thought Bill O'Reilly should pay for them. But you have so many that I'm going to say that at least over 50% of these allegations are absolutely true, that these men tried to use their positions of power to get women to do things, to get to women to sexually do things. And that's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. But there are people out there who are finding out about this and don't give a dang. Of course, I've told you, I don't think any of you should be watching Bill O'Reilly anyway because they believe he's a bad guy. And I don't particularly think that he's a very good journalist. There, I said it. I think he's a hothead. I think he's a know-it-all. I see no modesty in this man. I see no humbleness in this man. Nothing. And so it doesn't surprise me that if that's his attitude, that's his personality, that he would probably think that making suggestive comments to these women and everything, he thought he was doing them a favor. And but you people, you just keep watching. You just keep watching. I've told you, the only time I even run into Bill O'Reilly's show is when I'm home to see my parents. And I have to tell you, every night that my dad flicks that show on, I have to walk out of the room. That is just a given that I have to get up and leave the room. But it's in reading a couple articles about what's going on in Bill O'Reilly going on vacation, it sounds to me like Rupert Murdoch, who was the guy that started Fox News, wants to keep Bill O'Reilly around. And, of course, Rupert and Bill O'Reilly have a long history, given that Bill O'Reilly has been on the channel for so long. But James Murdoch, who is Rupert's son, who really does run things now, wants to get rid of Bill O'Reilly. And this was the situation that happened with Roger Ailes as well, is that, as far as I understand it, that Rupert wanted to keep Roger Ailes around. James Murdoch wanted to get rid of Roger Ailes, and James won. He was the guy who made the ultimate decision. And if that is the case, if this is all true, then, and I'm reading that Bill O'Reilly's show has lost quite a few advertisers since this all started to pop up, that this can't continue forever. I don't know what to think of it. I don't know how many of these advertisers are really disgusted. They probably like the money that Bill O'Reilly has generated for their companies. So I don't know. Is this an economic decision? Is this a moral decision? I don't know. I think to back to when Steve Harvey was on with Jerry Seinfeld on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, and him talking about something that he said on one of his programs that everybody got upset about, and advertisers started backing out, and he had to get out and apologize. And it was just a joke. He made a joke about something, and Jerry was like, well, why did you do that? It was just a joke. Why did you apologize? And he said, well, just because of the advertisers. You know, one starts backing out, then all these other companies then feel that they have to back out because they want to see as being as morally equal to this other company. And Steve Harvey says, don't get me wrong, they really don't feel that way, but, you know, it's just business. If they could get away staying with me regarding that joke, they would, but the public pressure is too much. They're really not offended by the joke at all. But, in some way they have to be self-righteous or whatever. And I thought that was very insightful on Steve Harvey's part to say that. It's probably what's going on with Bill O'Reilly as well. You have one or two advertisers who truly are offended that finding out about this, then all these other advertisers have to back out for the same reason. They want to make sure that they aren't seen as being morally inferior to these other companies who did back out. Even though in the end, for business reasons, they just don't really care what Bill O'Reilly does behind the scenes at all. Whereas all I care about is the truth, and all I care about is the moral core of the people who watch that show. And I've told you that I just don't like the show. I think as a conservative, you can't watch it. I know that sounds crazy because so many conservatives over the years think that Bill O'Reilly has done such a great job. I don't believe he has. I personally believe I could do better. just to be honest. And he the times that he had the opportunity to question Hillary Clinton, to question Barack Obama, and other people that you would say were on the left, to me, he went light on them. And you may say, well, that's the only way you would get to talk to them. Then you don't talk to them. If you're going to have to parse your words, and you're allowed to ask these questions but not those questions, then you don't do the interview. And you tell your audience that. I had an opportunity to question Barack Obama. I had everything set up, but they were only going to allow me to ask certain questions. And I said, I can't do that as a reporter. I can't do that. And if they wanted a final edit on the interview, I'm not going to do that. That's why you won't be seeing me talk to Hillary or Barack Obama or anybody else. If I can't ask the questions that I want, now there's nothing I can do. If they don't want to answer them, there's nothing I can do. But then that gets to go on the record. But if they're going to tell me these questions can't be asked, then I'm just not going to waste my time. That Bill O'Reilly would waste his time in these conversations, not being as tough as he acts on his show when those people aren't around, is part of the problem, I think, of where conservative media has gone wrong. You know, getting to interview people just for the ratings, for the eyeballs, instead of actually calling these people on the carpet. I guess you could say a good example of that would be Sean Hannity with Julian Assange as well. He didn't ask Julian Assange one tough question. Not one. Now, why do you think that is? Why? Because maybe, I mean, some of you are going to believe, well, Sean Hannity probably wanted to, but Julian Assange and his people wouldn't allow to do that. Well, then Sean Hannity shouldn't have done the interview, period. You may also say that, you know, some of you who think even more inferior of Sean Hannity say, well, he didn't want to do that. Because he really wanted to show Julian Assange in a positive light, which is even worse. Once again, that's horrible as well. So Bill O'Reilly, if he leaves Fox News, hey, they've had turnover there. They'll be fine. Greta Van Susteren's gone. Megyn Kelly's gone. If Bill O'Reilly leaves, they'll be fine. They'll be fine. But I think that if, you know, Fox News has to figure out, you know, what exactly it's doing. What exactly is the theme of the show? It's certainly not fair and balanced. That now is a joke. It's Trump fair and balanced. That's what it is. And that's going to have to change if this station wants to continue to get the best ratings of all the cable channels, I think. Let's move on to something else. Donald Trump, in an interview, says that we aren't going into Syria. Now, this is 4 days after these missiles were shot into Syria. Now he's telling people we're not going into Syria. Then what are we doing? Now, what I think, now, if I may really be explicit on what I think he means by that, what he's saying is we are not going to be going into Syria, meaning we're not going to put boots on the ground, we're not going to have soldiers in platoons, we're not going to have American tanks and anything like that on the ground in Syria, fighting against Assad or anything like that. So what it essentially means, I think that's what it means. I think when he's seeing that in his head, if he's telling the truth, he means that we're not going to be spending a load of soldiers and Marines over there to get on the ground and dodge bullets. I think that's what he means. Then what's the plan? If the plan is to, if he definitely wants Assad out of there, the United States. If the Trump administration to decide that Assad must go, and you're not going to put anybody on the ground there, then how are you going to get him out of office? Are you just going to keep lobbying cruise missiles in there? Is that the idea? Is the idea to guilt Russia from now to who knows when, saying that Assad can't stay in power? And the American people, do the American people want soldiers, American men and women, on the ground in Syria in the middle of a civil war? I don't think so, but it seems that there were a majority of the American people like what we did with those strikes, getting back to what I said yesterday about, you know, the United States seeming powerful. You know, and what is that? Is that from Star Wars? When war does not make men great? War does not make the United States strong. Shooting missiles does not make the United States strong. Having a secure set of principles makes America strong. The reason that we were weak during the Barack Obama years is because we had no principles. They weren't even liberal principles. They were all over the map, and nobody knew what to predict on us on a day-to-day basis, and nobody respects that. That's why we became weak. Maybe a little different than what happened in the Jimmy Carter years. Well, that has continued now. We now have a president who campaigned somewhat on an isolationist policy, and now suddenly we're lobbing missiles into a country that's going through its own civil war, which you could say is more interventionist than you could probably ever imagine. And that's what makes America weak, not shooting missiles. Not the lack of shooting missiles. But Donald Trump, the way he is, this is his version of that. So it comes back to, what are we going to do? What is the answer? If Assad doesn't get the message with 60 cruise missiles, it'll be 120 next time, or 180. What's after that? 240, 300 cruise missiles. Where do we want to go with this? It's hard to understand. And when you say something like he said, you're basically telegraphing to the enemy, if it's the truth. And, you know, paradoxically, on one hand, I think the American people like the shooting of the missiles, but on the other hand, I don't think they want any boots on the ground in Syria either. So I'm inclined to believe that he is telling the truth, but this is also the problem, as I've talked about many times recently, the problem with populism, doing what the people want. And, you know, people want something done because of those children. Okay, we're going to fire some missiles in there. But the people don't want any soldiers on the ground in Syria. Okay, well, so we can't do that. Well, now what do the people want? Now what? And I would say that it is not the American people who determine foreign policy. They elected a guy to handle foreign policy. That person is Donald Trump. And he and his experts and his advisors are supposed to come up with that on their own, then sell that to the American people. They're just not supposed to talk to the American people and do what a poll says, because really, people don't think out these issues for themselves, and most of the time, they have very little information to go on. But this is what foreign policy based on people's feelings looks like. It's up and down, all around, and probably going to get us nowhere with this. It's only made things more complicated, to the point where Vladimir Putin is saying that it was the rebels who dropped the chemicals on their own people. Well, hey, Donald Trump always loves a good conspiracy theory. But I got to go. You can find me, EdwardDensel.com. Find me on Twitter, USA Podcast. Find this show on Monday through Friday. The show is getting moved. It's being moved to 2 a.m. Eastern time in the United States. I know that sounds like a weird time, but in internet radio terms, it's actually a pretty decent time. So it'll be 11 p.m. on the Pacific Coast. You can also find the show on Podomatic and iTunes, and then my other program, Unfound. You can find it also on Podomatic and iTunes. You can also follow on Twitter, Unfound Podcast. I gotta go. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.